is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, April 11th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll get a preview of what's coming up this week at the 75th Annual Conference on World Affairs. The Colorado River Basin benefited from this past winter's precipitation, but will need several years of the same to recover. That story and more on This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth? Today's science show will feature a discussion about the neuroscience of chronic pain and the mind-body approach to treatment. At 9 a.m., tune in for another archival recording of British philosopher Alan Watts. Then at 9:30, Sanford Baran will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for headlines with KGNU's John Callen.
Colorado is joining 22 other states and the District of Columbia to challenge a ruling that could restrict access to medication abortion in the United States. A coalition of state attorneys general filed an amicus brief Monday in the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Fifth Circuit, urging the court to stay a Texas judge's ruling pending an appeal. That ruling by a federal judge in Texas last week ordered the FDA to roll back its more than two decades-old approval of mifepristone. That ruling would go into effect at the end of this week. Also last week, a federal judge in Washington State ordered the FDA to not roll back its approval of the drug. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser called the Texas judge's ruling a flagrant attempt to deny women the right to make decisions about their own reproductive health care. He added that mifepristone has been shown overwhelmingly to be safe and effective. Medication abortions account for more than half of all abortions in the United States. Denver's school board vice president is facing possible censure for allegedly leaking confidential information in the wake of a shooting at East High School last month. Board President Sochi Gaitan has accused Ayante Anderson of giving the confidential information to the media after a closed-door executive session. Anderson says the information was shared outside of the executive session. The board has been under pressure since the shooting, when two East High administrators were wounded by a student who later took his own life. School board members voted the next day to put armed police back in Denver schools. The move reverses a policy won after a years-long fight to remove so-called school resource officers. In a press conference a few days after that, Vice President Anderson said Mayor Michael Hancock forced the school board's decision. According to the Denverite, Anderson had previously led the effort to get police out of city schools. The forced removal of homeless encampments, known as sweeps, have the potential to decrease life expectancy. That's according to a new study by the Journal of the American Medical Association. KGNU's Steve Miller explains.
The JAMA study was led by Joshua Barakas, an infectious disease doctor at the University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus, and includes data gathered by the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless. Dr. Barakas said that homeless sweeps contribute to deaths because those affected are no longer close to familiar resources. As a result, they are more likely to discontinue medications, and those addicted to drugs are more likely to overdose or share needles and syringes. Dr. Barakas told the Denverite that ongoing homeless sweeps are likely to contribute to up to 25% of all homeless deaths over a 10-year period. The JAMA study also looked at information gathered in Boston, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
Former Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters is appealing her sentence following a misdemeanor conviction for obstruction of government operations. Peters still faces felony criminal charges stemming from the 2020 presidential election. KGNU's Alyssa Palazzo has the story.
A Mesa County jury sentenced Tina Peters to 4 months of house arrest on Monday, following her conviction last month. A judge charged Peters with a misdemeanor for illegally using an iPad to record a court hearing. Peters is appealing the sentence, which is now on hold until the appeal is settled. In addition to the house arrest, Peters was also ordered to perform 120 hours of community service and pay a fine of $750. She avoided a possible 6 months in jail. Harvey Steinberg, Peters' attorney, told the Denver Post that Peters should not go to jail since it was her first conviction, and because she was exercising her rights to question the government. Peters has gained notoriety as a denier of the 2020 presidential election. Monday's sentencing is separate from the 7 felonies and 4 misdemeanor charges she faces for her alleged involvement in a security breach in Mesa County's election equipment. That case is scheduled to go to trial in the fall. For KGNU, I'm Melissa Palazzo.
The first of 3 open houses on the future of the Boulder Municipal Airport is scheduled for later today. The meeting is designed to gather information on the community's vision of the airport's future. Organizers say they'll introduce the city's Airport Community Conversation Engagement Project and describe the airport's current uses and plans for future use. 4 climbing areas in Boulder Canyon are open to the public again now that the Golden Eagle nesting season is over. Blob Rock, East Blob Rock, Biddy Buttress, and Security Risk have reopened to climbers. They close temporarily every year as the birds look for nesting sites. Eagle Rock is still closed to the public and will remain closed through July. In today's weather outlook, expect sunny skies and unseasonably warm temperatures. Look for a high of 84 degrees in Denver, 80 in Boulder, 82 in Fort Collins. Cooler up in Nederland with an expected high of 81 degrees. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. The 75th edition of the Conference on World Affairs opens tomorrow on the CU Boulder campus. The conference is an annual gathering of academics, experts, policymakers, and community members. 2 of the conference organizers are with me today. Hannah Wood is Interim Director of Operations and Programs for CWA, and Yvette Lowney is a CWA community leader and a local environmental scientist. Thanks to you both for joining me in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Hannah, start us off with a broad strokes overview of what's in store at this year's conference.
Yes, we're really excited to be back for our 75th year. This year, of course, we will be focusing on climate change, but actually through a term Yvette shared with me once, it will be kind of climate change through the lens of CWA. So it will be climate change through arts, climate change through business, science, and talking about everything from climate solutions, climate technologies, and also focusing on what are some of the worries or fears or things that are just coming up for us, not only for our generation, but also for our students as well.
Indeed, looking at this year's conference topics, the CWA did seem to have more of a thematic focus on climate and the environment. Why specifically zero in on that when past conferences have been kind of a grab bag of world affairs?
You know, partly in response to the Right Here, Right Now conference that was held at CU in December, we were asked to pick up and echo some of the themes that emerged from that.
Pin in that. What's the Right Now, Right Here, Right Now conference?
Yes. That was, actually, Hannah can probably talk better to that than I can.
Yes. So the Right Here, Right Now conference happened in this past December at CU Boulder. It was a partnership between the University of Colorado, an organization called Right Here, Right Now, which focuses on climate change and human rights, and then also with the UN Human Rights Group as well. And it was a conference that came together to focus on specifically climate change and human rights issues.
Okay, close parentheses. Back to you, Yvette.
So we were asked to echo some of the themes that came up out of that. And so we decided that it was quite an opportunity to take on the most challenging issue of our time. And as Hannah has mentioned, look at it from a 360-degree perspective, not just on politics or not just on what technologies or what modeling shows, but actually to be looking at it more on a holistic basis, the way CWA handles all of our issues.
Yvette, I introduced you as a CWA community leader. What does that mean and what all does it entail?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So one of the magic things about CWA is how it is put together. And one of the things that keeps me coming back is that we are a true collaboration between the community and the university, a true town and gown operation.
In what way?
We are organized, conceived, and planned by volunteers from the community, student volunteers, and coordinating with university staff. So we're given a very large task of coordinating our volunteer corps to develop a multi-day conference involving hundreds of speakers, involving hundreds of volunteers from the community and hundreds of students volunteers. So my job has been this year to help keep the programming on task, and so that we start in April, and then by the time the next April comes, we actually have something that goes into a program with a clear and coherent program for people to understand.
And as an environmental scientist and community leader of this conference, are there any panels in particular that you are really excited about?
So I was thinking about this last night. That for me, that's sort of like asking what my favorite ice cream flavor is, which is, I don't know, it depends on what's in the refrigerator. But in this case, there are so many. My biggest frustration is that we're running, well, as always, we're running panels concurrently, and there's several that I always want to be at. One of the ones that has jumped up for me as being particularly I'm looking forward to is that we're kicking off our Thursday program with a panel on how to be a savvy consumer of climate-related information. And I'm really excited about that. I'm excited because in this day and age of so much information, I do find that it is, even with a technical background, I find it's hard to know what to believe and know what to how to understand it. And so in the classic CWA way, we have brought together people with policy backgrounds, people with technical modeling backgrounds, individuals with business backgrounds, psychology and neuroscience, and actually Kirk Siegler, who might be interesting to your some of your NPR listeners, is also going to be on that panel bringing the communication side. So I'm excited about that one.
And in the program guide, as you mentioned, there's, you know, you see some things and you're just like, oh, these both look great. There are two panels with similar names, both dealing with the Colorado River crisis. Are these two panels meant to be taken together or can they be in separate parts?
That's a wonderful question. So early in our planning process, our students identified the Colorado River as a topic they really wanted to see discussed. And as we move forward, we realized there was so much to discuss. We couldn't quite fit it all into one panel. And so it's been broken up into an initial panel that is focused on how did we get to where we are? You know, what was the math that went into that? What were the policies that went into it? And then the second panel is more on the what do we do from here, where we bring in a lot of the stakeholders and put them together to discuss into the future. And so it would be great to attend both of them, but they can definitely be, they will stand on their own.
Hannah Wood, aside from these expert panels, what other events are on the schedule for the CWA?
Yes. So as we mentioned, it is our 75th anniversary. So a few ways we'll be celebrating this, which we're excited about, is we welcome everyone to attend our program that will be tomorrow, Wednesday, April 12th at 3 p.m. It will feature a historic video, a tribute to jazz, as jazz has been a long part of our history here with the Conference on World Affairs, and then a kickoff keynote address by James Balog, who is a CU alumni, and then also, he is an environmental photographer and activist as well. And so we really invite people to celebrate with us. It'll be this combination of kicking off into our conference, but also just celebrating the 75 years we've had here in Boulder. And so, like I mentioned, the doors will actually open at 2:30 for this event with a Latin American jazz band from the CU College of Music. And they will be playing and opening up our conference for us. And so we would love to see people there. And this is free and open to the public.
There's also a movie.
Yes, correct. We also have Eber Interruptus, which is also a longstanding tradition with the Conference on World Affairs. And this will be run by Josh Larson, who has been a longtime speaker coming back. And this will be Wednesday from 12 to 2 at the UMC or the University Memorial Center. And then it will be 4 to 6 on Thursday and Friday.
And since there are so many events going on in such a short amount of time,
yes.
Where can people find out more?
Yes, you can find out more at www.colorado.edu/CWA.
Well, I want to say, first of all, anything else you wanted to add in our final minute?
I just wanted to say really quickly, too, as much as we're focusing on climate, we worked really hard this year to also engage our faculty and some local experts as well. And we'll be featuring some really wonderful Denver nonprofits and, of course, some of our CU faculty.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And my parting words would be to bring your friends when you come.
Yes.
We've heard people say that the best strategy is to divide, go have somebody go to all of the different panels and then come back and go have coffee and talk about what you each learned in each of them.
And if you do miss a panel, they will be available streaming yes. online afterwards.
Correct. They will be live streamed and then they will be recorded on our website after that.
I've been speaking with Hannah Wood and Yvette Launey of the Conference on World Affairs. The event kicks off tomorrow on the CU Boulder campus and runs through Friday. Thanks to you both for joining me in the studio.
Thank you.
Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
A new twist in the climate change story, that and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The West saw heavy levels of precipitation in many areas this winter, and this is good news for water levels in Lake Mead on the Colorado River, the country's largest reservoir.
According to the Bureau of Reclamation, by the end of March, the lake had risen around 3 feet above projections and is about 5 feet higher than last July's record low.
And more good news, the National Weather Service said that as of April 1st, Lake Powell, another large reservoir in the river, is forecast during the snowmelt runoff season to get more water than 170% of the last 30-year annual average.
Those amounts of precipitation would have to continue to solve the decades-long drought in the Southwest and bring lasting relief to the 40 million people who depend on the river.
Brad Udall of Colorado State University told the Colorado Sun that it would take something like 6 years in a row, like this year, to refill the reservoirs, which he said is unlikely we're ever going to see.
In related news, last week the Biden administration said it will use nearly $350 million to enhance tribal water resources and to fund conservation in the Colorado River Basin.
A new study is highlighting the benefits of a method to store renewable energy that can heat and cool homes and buildings when wind turbines aren't spinning and the sun isn't shining.
It's called Aquifer Thermal Energy Storage, or ATIS for short. Researchers at the U.S. Department of Energy's Berkeley Lab describe ATIS as a delightfully simple concept. A system would pump water up from existing underground aquifers, warm it using excess energy from solar or wind, or allow it to heat at the surface during the summer.
Then it's pumped back down into a shallow aquifer where it will stay fairly hot because it's well insulated underground. In winter months, the water is pulled up and pumped through buildings for heating.
The reverse could also work to cool buildings. Chill water at the surface and pump it underground until needed in hotter months.
The method, while currently costlier than existing energy technologies, could reduce the use of natural gas and electricity in the building sector by 40% in the U.S. and could also help prevent blackouts caused by high demand, even during extreme weather events.
In the last few weeks, the U.S. has endured a series of deadly tornadoes which left homes and businesses destroyed and more than 60 people dead.
It's been an aggressive start for this year's tornado season, which is also notable for where the storms occurred, ravaging Alabama, Illinois, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Arkansas, far east of the so-called Tornado Alley of the Great Plains, where twisters are more common.
According to new research from Northern Illinois University, that high activity and eastward shift could be the beginning of a trend. As the planet heats up because of climate change, there's more moisture in the air and areas where the atmosphere is increasingly unstable, two key ingredients to spawn tornadoes.
To arrive at their conclusion, the team modeled two greenhouse gas concentration scenarios, one considered intermediate and the other pessimistic. Under both trajectories, the number of annual supercells, an uncommon type of thunderstorm that can spawn violent tornadoes,
becomes more frequent and intense, increasing by 7 to 15% respectively.
If the models are correct and a growing number of storms shift eastward, particularly into the Ozarks and Mid-South, tornadoes have the potential to be more damaging because they'll likely be in more populated areas. And finally, Major League Baseball is in full swing, and for fans hoping their sluggers successfully swing for the fences, they might just get their wish. A new study says climate change could lead to more home runs.
Researchers at Dartmouth College analyzed more than 100,000 Major League games and 220,000 individual hits to correlate home runs with unseasonably warm temperatures.
They found that more than 500 home runs since 2010 can be attributed to higher than average temperatures. That sounds like a lot, but it's only about 1%. By the end of the century, though, if greenhouse gases aren't batted down, they say homers could rise 10%.
It's basic physics. Warmer air is less dense, allowing baseballs to go farther through the thinner air that has less resistance. To counteract the effects of climate change, games would need to be played at night or in covered stadiums. That would also make sure teams and fans alike are more comfortable as the planet warms.
While a study that analyzes global warming and America's favorite pastime might seem less important than warning about consequences like heat waves, droughts, and severe weather, using a cultural reference like baseball might resonate with a wider audience to communicate that if we don't step up to the plate and act on climate, we're gonna strike out.
That's it for This Week in Water, which is sponsored today by our contributory, Margarita Rhodes of California.
Margarita said, "As a surfer, I applaud the focus H2O Radio brings to water issues and the coastal environment. Keep riding that wave, H2O Radio."
We will, Margarita. Thanks for listening and see you next week.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
I'm calling to thank KGNU and Rosanna Longo and Monica for the program Stories of People of Color this morning, and really appreciated having things often not part of the cultural stream being brought forward, talking about ceremony and its importance and also its effectiveness. And I can attest to the power of creating ceremony with other people. It's really wonderful. I also appreciated talk about how Mother Earth really needs us to consciously, with open hearts, communicate with plants and trees and animals and sky and express our appreciation. That connection is so important, and it's great to hear it talked about on the radio. So thank you.
Hi, I just wanted to thank John Lendorf and Shannon Young for a fabulous kitchen table. It was so interesting, and I think everything could have been expanded on, so hopefully it will be in future shows. And I also just wanted to say, if you don't like dandelions, eat your dandelions. They're just delicious. You can cut the flowers, but not all of them, because you want to save some for the bees, and dip them in some beaten egg or an egg substitute and a little bit of gluten-free or regular flour and cornmeal and saute them, and they are delicious, much better than using pesticides. Thank you. This is Elena.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. That's it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Thanks to John Kellen, Alyssa Palazzo, Steve Miller, Alexis Kenyon, Jamie Sudler, Franny Halperin, and in-studio guests Hannah Wood and Yvette Lowney for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's on the other side of these headlines from the BBC.